again this week for the second week in a row, wanting to present some programming unlike what we've typically done and to give voice to Black community members who are involved in theater to talk about what is important to them. For too long and too often, the theater community in Champaign-Urbana, as it is across the nation, has been dominated by white voices telling white stories, produced and directed by white people. And we want to be part of the change that needs to happen overall. So See You at the Show is determined to do our part by making changes in the way that we present content and also in who presents that content.
So this week we hand over the mic to Jalen Hope and Christina Jones. Jalen has been on the program before, and Christina Jones is new to the show. And so today we're handing over the mic to them. Enjoy.
I was asked to do a podcast for See You at the Show. See You at the Show is, CU stands for Champaign-Urbana. So it's See You at the Show. They asked if I would be willing to be a voice for the community, for my community, that being the African-American community, in this time, and if I would be willing to create a podcast to discuss some of the things that are happening in the world, in the context of what's going on in the world, but also in the context of performing arts and discrimination in the artistic community and things of that nature, and what we can do, because I don't want to do a podcast and just spend time talking and not offer any kind of solutions. So things we can do to begin shifts and to create, you know, little waves in this ocean that is art. First, rest in peace, George Floyd. So much is happening right now. There's a protest. There has been a protest, at least, in all 50 states and 8 other countries. And so there's so much, so many great things are happening right now in the world and in the community that have been inspired by the story of George Floyd's murder. And this, right now we see George Floyd, but this isn't the first time we've been in a George Floyd-like situation. Mm-hmm. So this is a protest for George Floyd, but it's also for many things. It is for Emmett Till, it's for Rodney King, it's for Breonna Taylor, it's for Mike Brown, it's for Ahmaud Arbery, and oh, so many names that go not unremembered. We don't forget, but unmentioned sometimes. It's sad that there's so many.
Yeah.
I think the hardest part is knowing there are so many and hearing how every story is ever so slightly different, but they're all under the same umbrella.
Yeah.
I think that's the most challenging part for me. But we're going to have a conversation about discrimination and racial prejudice, racial bias outside of the artistic community and inside of the artistic community. Look for overlap, discuss examples, and come up with some resolutions about how we should be moving forward as an artistic community, as a global artistic community, and things we can do to affect change and to continue the conversation. Okay, so let's start with just some standard questions. So what do you define as, well, there are so many different things to talk about. There's racial discrimination, there's gaslighting, there's racial profiling, there's stereotypes. Both of us being African American women performers.
Yeah.
Which sometimes sounds like we decided that we didn't want to have paychecks for the rest of our lives.
You're right.
Yeah. But no. What do you define as racial discrimination?
See, I struggled with this question the first time you asked it, and I don't know why, but I think for me, racial discrimination would probably, it would probably for me mean like prohibition based on the color of your skin. Prohibition may be like, you know, like, I guess just like, well, I mean, the basic things, just like not being able to do things or not really having opportunities because of the color of your skin. It can also be just like the implicit biases that you have towards people. And instead of actively recognizing them and not going by them, you do the exact opposite and go by them in order to put somebody down based on their skin color. So that's what I would define as racial discrimination.
I define racial discrimination as when someone sees my skin color and they choose to see that before they see my potential. So sometimes it's like when I am qualified and when I have the ability to be the person or to be a representative individual for myself, for my community. And it can be in small scales too. It's having a conversation and someone doesn't believe that you have a right to have an opinion on that matter because your skin doesn't qualify you. It's seeing the color of a person's skin before recognizing or ever evaluating the quality or content of their character. We're seeing the potential that they have to create change or anything of that matter. Have you experienced racial discrimination?
Yes.
Now, I'm going to meld these two questions together. So talk about racial discrimination you've experienced outside of theater and inside of theater.
I really, really had to take a step back and figure out what was racial discrimination and what maybe was like a misunderstanding on my part, just because I have always been surrounded by white people. You know, I've always been surrounded by people who don't look like me. And when you have people that don't look like you, you don't really see the problems that come with people who don't look like you, you know, or people who look like you, you know. So for me growing up, if I did ever have like any type of discrimination against me, I probably wouldn't have registered it in my mind as discrimination. And this goes back to what I was saying about what racial discrimination is to me, is the prohibition of what you can do based on the color of your skin. In this instance that I'm about to talk about, this would probably be the prohibition to speak and the prohibition to make my case. I don't know, in those times it's really hard to even fathom like whether or not you have a voice and whether or not like anything that you say or anything that you do even matters, simply because they've already made up their minds about you just by looking at you, you know. It happens a lot in theater. And it's really heartbreaking when you constantly feel like you have to prove yourself when you walk into the room, because if not, they're already going to they already see you as one thing. You know, they already see you as the token Black ensemble member in the back that qualifies for like racial diversity in their cast or whatever. Or you get stereotyped and tokenized into the token Black girl role or the token Black man role, and you're there for shits and giggles, or you're there because you're fabulous or you're soulful or whatever, you know? And it's always a cartoon character, but it's not necessarily a human being.
Yeah. And
so honestly, like,
it's like putting blackface on an actual black person.
Yes. Yes. And surprise, surprise, that's already happened in history, which is really sad because that was the only way that we could perform.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that was the only, those were the only opportunities that we had. But yeah, it's really difficult to have to prove yourself that you're more than just the token black girl, or you're more than just the token black man, or you're just more than the token black person.
Yeah, or that you're not a token.
Yeah, or that you're not a token. You know, you have more to offer than just belting your face and being black.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Yes. I remember speaking on examples in theater, I know that when I was a freshman, and I want to say it because it comes back to what you just said, it's different playing a token black character like Mitch Mahoney in 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. That's so many words. Versus playing a character in a black story like Ain't Misbehavin' or The Piano Lesson, which is even more different than playing a character in a black, in a story that, whether it's black or not, it intends to offer a lesson, like Elephant's Graveyard, or like Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that, where culture was a giant piece and it adds so much to the story, though it's not the focal point, you know? There's so many other things that it talks about and so many other things it discusses. So I remember when I was a freshman, my school had two major musicals, and one of them was Little Women.
Mm-hmm.
And I was playing the aunt, what is her name? Aunt March. There we go. I was playing Aunt March, and I was learning this Irish accent, and I was the black aunt to these four white girls. And we're preparing for the show, and we're down in the green room, and she says, "All right, I'm going to say some things to put you guys in the frame of mind of this story." And she's like, "Think about the time period. There would still be slavery." And I'm like, "Wait a minute, there would still be slavery. And this is a cast of 13, and I'm the only African American." And it's not to say that that's something dealing with racial discrimination, but it's to say that there are times when there's a need for cognizance. And a need for, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but there's more discussion that needs to be had about what my role is and what it isn't in an African American community, in a theater community, in a white community, in a global art community, and things of that nature. I remember just the next semester, we put on a show called Working. And before the auditions, I had never heard of that show before. And I think almost every single show I did in high school, I had never heard of before. And so, yeah. And so I was new to theater, and I went to the director, and I was like, "Hey, so what do you think I should be looking into? What kind of things should I be looking for so I know what kind of characters I should be auditioning for?" And he hands me a copy of the script. He hands me a copy of the script and he says, hey, there's this woman in there and she's Aretha Franklin-esque. And I think you should look at this one. And I say, okay, because I don't know any better. And so I read it, I get the part, I do the show, and I come to find out that she's singing this gospel-esque song. And it's like, I was the token. And it wasn't a bad token, it's just I was. And it was something that I didn't realize then, but I understood later. And in that cast, and in most of the cast I was in high school, I was one of five African Americans, generally in casts of 20 or 30. And that's not to say anything bad about the programs, because there were some things that I did that were really great, and some opportunities that I had that were pretty remarkable. Mm-hmm. But recognizing that I was a token, and recognizing that sometimes I was there to fill space, and that if I wasn't there, someone else would still be being used to fill that space, it's something to think about.
Sorry.
No, you're fine, you're fine.
I was just saying, I remember a lot of the times I realized that in casting, in like musicals and things like that, I was only really necessary for the token characters, but I wasn't really needed for pretty much anything else, you know, because like I remember Black people would only really be seen as like one thing at my school. Like, I remember when I got like my first lead role in high school as a freshman. And like, it was so much fun. Like, it was so much fun playing that role. But I was the janitor.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, as much fun as I had in that musical, like, those were really like, unless it was like, you know, like a token role in a musical, you know, like The Witch, or like, you would always be like the janitor or the homeless woman or, you know, the assistant, or, you know, like I was always a servant of some kind. Or it's really interesting the types of roles that they put Black people in.
Yeah, no, I was a receptionist or like an office assistant. Mm-hmm. I was a gangster. I was a cleaning woman. Mm-hmm. I think I was a best friend.
Well,
it's just I know, right? Yeah. Always the best friend. Yeah, the Black best friend is such a heavy trope in the world. Or my Black friend, you know, and more often than not, it's a female, and more often than not, she, in some stories, she's sassy, she's got the hand on her hip, shaking her head mentality, and sometimes we appreciate that. Because sometimes it can be realistic. Sometimes it can say, it says something about African American women. And sometimes it can be a challenge because we see it a lot. I know people like Tiffany Haddish used to talk about how she would take her purse and leave her phone in it and turn her phone on record and go to auditions and then leave her purse in the room, so that she could come back and get it later. And she would hear people say things like the director and the casting director would say things like, oh my Lord, why can't we make this a white woman? Or like, why can't she doesn't have enough of this. She's not enough of the stereotype for us to cast her. Or this, that, and the other. And she was like, man, it took me a long time to get where I am. But these are some of the things that I went through that got me to where I am.
Yeah.
It's hard in your own community to branch out. That's something I know I experienced a lot in high elementary school and middle school, never feeling like I really fit into a community because of my own interests, you know?
Literally my entire life. I used to get in elementary school because I didn't fit in with the black kids.
Like
I shoved me around in the hallways and like hit me in the face with tether balls and shit because I wasn't like them. Mm-hmm. And there's like such a, growing up, it's also to say that growing up, I didn't really want to be black or be associated with the black community just because.
Right.
Experiences from feeling so drastically different, and that's really damaging. Like, it's really sad to think, you know, like, but anyway, that just came to mind when you said
yes. As a member of the global art community, or as members of small art communities like Champaign Urbana, what can we do to, one, show our support for the current protests happening in the world right now, two, be cognizant of the needs of African Americans in our art communities, and three, create artistic environments that serve African Americans and all people in an equitable way? Go.
I have to go, like, honestly, I feel like everybody as an artist, like all artists, have a responsibility and a right, honestly, to to not only entertain, obviously, but to spread awareness, to speak up, to like use your art to speak up and to educate. Honestly, I feel like especially theater artists, because there's so many ways that we as theater folk can spread awareness and spread positivity and fight, you know. I'm just saying, like, us as artists, like, as far as making space in an equitable way, I think it goes back to what we were talking about with typecasting, with like Big Fish and everything like that. Like, seeing somebody not on the outside, but for the content of their character, you know, like, I don't mean to sound like, but like the vibes that they give off, you know, like, I guess, I don't know, but that's like the closest that I can get to explaining that.
Yeah. And sometimes creating space seems a little big. So what if it's just, let's have something I hope happens when we come back, is let's have a moment of silence before the show starts or before the post-show discussion to say, on opening night, to say we hold space for all of the crazy things that happened in 2020.
Yeah.
For the death toll because of COVID-19, for the George Floyd, the Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, which are the names we're saying now, but there are so many other names. Let's have a moment of silence for the names of the people who were taken, the people who were affected, the families that lost others. Mm-hmm. Because of COVID-19, let's have a moment of silence for the people who couldn't have funerals.
Yes.
For things that were related and unrelated to COVID-19. Let's have a moment of silence for pain. Let's have a moment of silence for relief. And then downbeat for Sweeney Todd. That's okay.
Yeah.
Let's do that. And I think something that simple says, we stand with you. And let's let it be something small, something well-written, say, we'd like to take this time to have a moment of silence in honor of all the things that took place in 2018, where our silence in this situation is a stand for justice, it's a stand for peace, and it's a stand for comfort. And that's it. And I think for me, that would be enough. I don't know how much enough or not enough that is for somebody else, but also, yes, holding space. Let's start offering and being more inclusive. Mm-hmm. I know that now it's gotten to the point where there are some shows that I don't even audition for because I'm like, I don't think there's room for me. But let's start creating environments where there is room. And sometimes that's as simple as encouragement.
Yes.
That's as simple as having a person say, I think that you have a place, and acknowledging that you have a place and offering you, I may not always, it may not be my table, but I'm going to pull up a chair for you. And even if you don't sit there, there was a chair, you know?
Yeah.
We need more chair pulling people, more people who are at the table to offer seats, you know? And that is going to take a long time.
Yeah.
But it's something that we can start. Yeah.
Yeah. If we start taking these steps now, though, like, even if it takes a long time, like, it's still going to happen, you know? Because, like, complacency isn't going to get us anywhere, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I just want to reinforce what you just said.
Yes, yes, yes. And I know that after this is over, I'm not gonna see 30 different productions of Dream Girls. It's just not gonna happen.
Yeah.
But, and if you have if you live in a city where all your town holds is enough for 4 different productions of My Fair Lady, then that's what you have, and that's okay. In that situation, the moment of silence is for you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can find the space, and if the light shines down on you in such a way, take advantage of that.
Yeah.
And this does not exclude other kinds of art, because sometimes we need shows like that. We need comedy that is just comical. We need entertainment that is just entertaining. Not everything has to be subjective. Not everything has to be abstract. Not everything has to demand your attention in such a way that it calls you to action. But it's nice sometimes that it does.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate communities like mine where in this last school year and in the last few school years, I know that working at Parkland College, we're striving to meet that balance.
Yeah.
With different shows and with different pieces of art that bring different issues to our attention. And we're not knocking them. We're creating space for them. We're pulling up chairs at the table. And I think that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Well, now I feel like it's a good place for a closure. But I tell you what, Christina just left. So I'm going to ask her for her bio so I can include it with the podcast and stuff. But I encourage you to take deep breaths. I encourage you, I implore you to be a part of the community, to continue to pull up seats to the table, to continue your involvement, to continue these conversations, and to continue to be instrumental in the change in this world. And don't just be the change. Let it change you. Evaluate your own personal biases and have conversations with other people and encourage dialogue that suggests change and things like that and things of that nature. So that was Christina Jones, and my name is Jalen Hope. Without hope, I am nothing. Thank you. Have a good night.
You are listening to WEFT Champagne 90.